In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey everybody, this is Jim Hoffman.
And I'm Josh.
Josh Knapp. What you have to do is, you do like me, you put your full name in so it doesn't just say Josh. Mine says Jim Hoffman and yours only comes up.
Yeah. You know, that it does, you're right, and I'm not even sure how I can change that on this new format.
I don't think you can now that you're in.
And that's it. Right. I'm just locked into it. I get a green screen, doesn't support it.
No.
You'll have to believe that I'm the same guy that's been with Jim hosting this podcast for too many years right now.
Yeah. Well, this is the EMS Office Hours. As always, guys, thanks for joining us. I am streaming this out to a couple different social media platforms. So depending upon where you are, please interact as appropriate. Give us a thumbs up or a like or a share, depending upon if you're watching it on Facebook or you're watching it on YouTube, whichever one you're looking at us from. Please go ahead and do that. So today, Josh, I'm trying to keep it light and airy today because I wanted to kind of get your opinion on a few things and kind of go from there.
I don't always have opinions on stuff.
Yeah, okay. The one thing that I was thinking about, you know, you see these commercials online with new technology that patients can use, right? You've got the pulse thing where you can put your fingers on the little pad.
Right.
It costs like, I think, $200 or $100 or whatever, and it gives them their heart rate and even a little picture of the heart rate for people who have like AFib or they're concerned about having AFib, and also things like the diabetic patients where they've got that device that sticks into their arm, and now they have like they can put their phone next to it and get their glucose reading.
Right.
So my question, I started thinking as EMS providers, right, we go and encounter these patients. So I'm wondering, How much of us do we trust that technology, trust what the patient is telling us they saw before we got there, you know, things like that for purposes of our assessment, purposes of our documentation, purposes of you know, prior medical events leading up to us being there. You know, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are with that. Because I know in the past for me, when I've had patients, you know, partners who've used their own glucometer, or they've used their own, you know, pulse ox, stuff like that. And when management found out they were using their own equipment, they would get a little bitched up because they didn't want them using something that wasn't approved by the department when it came to how the patient was being treated. I wonder if this is kind of crossing into the same type of, you know, mentality there.
Well, you know, first of all, there's a standard that anybody in EMS has to adhere to, that if it's not hospital approved or organizationally approved equipment, you can't use it. There's, right, unless specifically there's some sort of letter that goes out that says this is acceptable to do, you can't do it. Now, you know, you can walk down to, I mean, any CVS and pick up these pulse ox. You can pick up glucose monitoring,
blood pressure machines, everything. Sure.
Blood pressure. I mean, you know, short of and probably including ultrasound. I mean, for the public market in the last 10 years or so, the availability for medical devices to non-professionals has exploded. So you can get this stuff down, but it comes straight back to the lawyers. It's a matter of liability. So you can't use any of that equipment, even though you'd use it on yourself, use it on your grandmother. You know, you can't use it on in service unless it's been specifically approved.
Yeah.
It's a hard and fast rule.
It's funny, though, because, you know, a lot of times when we get dispatched to certain calls, like people who call because my blood pressure is high, right? They've used the home BP machine like 1,000 times. And it's an automatic BP cuff, and you get there, and your readings, or even the first responders before you get there, readings are different than what the patient had, right?
Right.
So where are, you know, I just find it, I guess, weird, because sometimes we're willing to accept what the patient is telling us on what they use, and other times we're not really willing to accept that we've got to still do our own type of thing. Take 12 leads, for example. You go to urgent cares, you go to doctor's offices where you get a patient complaining of chest pain, and they hand you their 12 lead printout. Do you accept that as the patient's current EKG, or do you run another 12 lead for yourself in the back of the ambulance or in the doctor's office before you start transporting?
And you know what it comes down to? It comes down to the organizational standards. So I did both 911 and critical care transport and regular ALS transport. And I can tell you that if I'm picking up from one of our own, I work for a private hospital, if I'm picking up from one of our own clinics and the doc there at the clinic hands me a 12 lead that was recently done. And usually what those docs will do is they'll have in the system and a comparative 12 lead that I can go 6 months ago, 2 years ago, whatever, and today's. I take those two. I use my monitor to monitor for a good waveform and, you know, transport. Because for a couple of different reasons. Now, if the patient is something where they're like active chest pain, like, so in the private world, you get transports for change in EKG changes. Uh-huh. So maybe there's a P wave now, an inverted P wave or a flattened T wave or something, you know, fairly benign like that. That's indicative of something, but it's a change. The patient's stable, patient's happy, patient is asymptomatic. You'll take that and you'll do the ALS monitoring. You'll go. You won't necessarily do your own 12 lead. Yeah. However, if the patient's active chest pain, then you sure should want to do your own 12 lead because it's an active evolving situation. Your 12 lead is not only a diagnostic tool, it's a monitoring tool. And you want to be able to go and say, okay, doc, I got this from 15 minutes ago or 10 minutes ago. I got mine now in real time. And en route to the hospital, the patient says, I have to do an intervention, or the patient's in pain, I'm doing another one right then and there.
Yeah.
That way I have this.
I love that you said that, how it's also the EKG could be a monitoring tool. And that's something I think that a lot of people start to get away from, you know, with vital signs in general, but even with EKGs, where they'll take the EKG when the patient complains of chest pain, and whatever it is, and they leave it at that, right? Unless they see something jumping out at them that's an actual event happening, then they might repeat it. But if they're just doing it and they're not going back and you know, repeating that 12 lead or just monitoring it, they're not doing a service for, you know, for the patient, and they're also overlooking things that might happen on the way to the hospital, something they can present as part of their presentation to the doc or the nurses at the ER, just like you do with vital signs, right? You start out, it might be really high or really low, and by the time you get to the hospital, it could totally change based on either your treatment or the event, even just the event passing. You take unthinkable patients, right? You might get on scene for a patient you get called for the unconscious and had a syncopal episode, and by the time you get to the hospital, everything's fine, right? But when you first got to the scene, the blood pressure might have been low, maybe they were a little clammy, but then by the time you get to the emergency room, it's like nothing ever happened.
Right.
You know,
and you know, as a practitioner, you have to keep in mind that things happen over time. and that there's both evolution over time and a specific incident at a period of time. But it's not for you to differentiate that. You're in the moment, and you know, it comes back down to the old saying of treat the patient, not the equipment, not the monitor. But we have these tools for a reason, and we're supposed to use them for a reason. How many times, let me ask you something. How many times you've been around somebody who has done an intervention and not retaken vital signs?
Sure.
I just took vital signs 10 minutes ago, you know? So what? A little bit of nitro. What? You know, because in the protocol, it's like you do the intervention, recheck vital signs. Right. You know, and when you're in on the ALS level, you know, I may have folks that disagree, but if you have a monitor, you're supposed to be using it. If the patient is, you know, if you're doing a real ALS job, I'm not talking about a cut finger or a fever. I'm talking about ALS, chest pain, shortness of breath.
Yeah.
You know, skin signs tell all.
Yeah.
And again, an old adage.
Yeah, but again, it's true. We have these tools, and you know, I mean, just think about the, you know, glucose for an example. When I was, you know, started being a paramedic and stuff, you took glucose readings for diabetic patients, and maybe if you when you had it for a suspected stroke to rule out that, right?
So wait a second. When you were starting out, as you're saying EMT or medic?
As a medic.
And your organization had glucometers?
No, in the beginning we didn't. And then when we did, it was only for, you know, diabetic patients. You weren't supposed to be checking for other things.
You come into the seizure on the floor, and you're looking around to try to determine, is this a seizure or is this a diabetic seizure?
Yeah.
You know, am I going to, you know, but you didn't have a way of, you had no way of telling what that person's sugar was. I mean, wasn't it, when you first started using glucometers in the field, even though you knew in your deep down in your guts what the patient's presentation was and what was likely the cause of it, and you went ahead and fixed it because you could work under the protocols were designed that way, you weren't sure what you fixed it from to. You just knew that at this moment in time, this intervention seemed to have worked. And then when you finally got the glucometer, I mean, it was like this person's blood sugar was 22, they're unconscious, and now it's, you know, 86 or 110, and they're talking to you.
Yeah. It's funny because I know when I first started and the whole thing was, you know, if they're having a stroke and it's not a hypoglycemia, and you give them D50, you know, their brain's going to explode and all this stuff, you know, and you didn't have the glucometer back then. You had to really rely on your assessment skills and patient presentation and all that. And over the years, I mean, now you do blood sugar for chest pain patients, for trauma patients, and you do pretty much every patient assessment you do, for the most part, you're doing a finger stick. Part of it is for your documentation, I guess, for CYA type of stuff, but it's also, I think part of how EMS has evolved is that we're I think a bigger part of the you know, the healthcare chain. So when we get to the hospital, we can present a lot more data to the doctors that are there. So some of the things that normally would have waited until we got to the hospital, now we're doing a lot of it out in the field. So when you get to the hospital, oh, what was the blood sugar? Boom, you know what it is. What was the EKG? You know what it is. What was, you know what I mean? So you kind of, and that's why a few minutes ago talking about getting the trend in there, getting the idea of what it is that, you know, is going on with the patient and retaking vital signs, retaking EKGs, retaking, you know, SpO2 is part of vital signs, and before, during, after oxygen administration, all that type of stuff, sitting, laying down, you know, different positions of patients. Then people blow off too often, you know, where when the documentation is asking you for what position the patient is in, like that's just some kind of arbitrary thing, but that matters if they're laying down or they're sitting up or semi, you know, semi sitting up, what their blood pressure reading is, what their oxygen saturation is. And people kind of get away from that. Oh, even sitting up, they blow it off. Yeah, everyone's semi-reclined, you know. Right. And right. A lot of people fail to realize that there's an important factor when it comes into that, because it's all data that's good for us as providers to figure out what's going on, but all and what our treatment is, or lack of treatment, how it's affecting the patient, and then on top of that, giving that data to the emergency room. You know.
So the question that I have to push back or ask you is, because, you know, you and I have both seen this in the old salts, the guys have been in the field forever, and we see it in the new guys that the new jacks, FNGs that mm-hmm. come in. And my question to you is, what do you think is the problem here? I mean, is it complacency? Is it bad education? Is it, you know,
I don't want to say, well, I mean, listen, you'll see, you can go on any Facebook page, right? And I mean, one of the Facebook pages where I frequented the EMT paramedic study group. And, you know, I go in there and I try to help people. I tell them about my termedic.com and see, tell them to go there to help with some study and stuff. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people seem to be struggling and not getting all the information they need from their instructors, and whether that's because it's a time issue and the instructors aren't getting the information out to them, or maybe when they're doing their field internships and going out in the field with other providers, those providers are so accustomed to doing what has to be done that they're not stressing, you know, the whole global picture of what they should be doing for patients during their assessment. It's not just, oh, I'm going to start here. I'm going to end down here, and then, you know, whatever I find in between, I'm going to deal with, and that's where I'm going to stop. I'm not going to look outside the box at all. I'm not going to kind of go, you know, anywhere beyond what that is. And then, you know, that's when, honestly, from experience and from seeing other people as well, is that's when it comes back to bite you. Because if you take the shortcut, like you said, you get complacent, that's when you're going to overlook something that's going to probably be, would have been obvious if you just looked and reassessed, you know, what was going on with the patient. And then, you know, you get to the hospital and then they're going to find it and you're going to look stupid.
When I first started, the big statement was beware and don't drop your guard with drunks. He said, drunks will always screw you up. And not in the sense that, you know, yes, could they become violent, but that's a whole different aspect of, you know, field service, emergency management, emergency services. It's that they may not be drunk. You know, you just because you found him on the street, maybe the guy's stroking out, maybe he had a hypoglycemic incident, maybe, right. You know, a million other maybes. But if you just because he has AOB or was found with a you know, a bottle of Shine, does not mean that what you see is what you're getting.
And Shine, where the hell are you at?
I was doing it for you because you're now a guy down south.
Bottle of Shine.
Bottle of Shine. Well, we use that out in Pennsylvania.
It's funny you say that because that is something I want to talk a little bit about. I mean, listen, like you said, drunks are a big thing, right? You know,
right.
It's annoying most of the time. They you know, all I need is a babysitter. But I've had them where there was shit going on with them that when you look just a little bit deeper, you find something that is emergent, you know. And I've had that happen with basic nursing home calls. You go to a nursing home or just a living facility and you get some elderly person and they're complaining of some nondescript complaint. And then you start evaluating them and you're finding shit that you're like, you almost feel like you're zebra hunting. But you're finding things that you can't ignore. There's stuff that's going on that you have to address. And now this patient that a minute ago was just a transport because they were coming from assisted living, they fell out of bed or they were complaining of something. I'm just feeling weak, whatever. And then when you start doing your assessment, you start peeling back that onion and you're finding things that, okay, now I've got a legitimate patient on my hands. you know, and the same thing with the drunk, right? It's the same type of thing. You know, you get them where they're drunk, maybe they're throwing up. Oh my God, it's gonna make a big mess in the back of the truck, blah, blah, blah. But then you start assessing them and you find that maybe their sugar is really low or super high, right? Or you do put them on the EKG on the monitor and you see something that looks like, okay, this guy's really a little off or whatever, you know? Well, God forbid to have an MI or something like that. You know what I mean? So it's all there. And then you got the, but you do have the violence, you know, issue to contend with. So I want to talk about, go ahead, Josh.
Just to end that up, I think the biggest sort of problem is what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Is it, do we present ourselves professionally, well-documented, and with a good story when we pick up this patient, or do we just bring them into the ER and say, I got another one for you, Sari?
Yeah.
Because at that point in time, you got to turn around and say, is it me or is it the doc? Now, I know we can bring it into the ED and we can get those docs who call you into the room. They debrief you. You know, they want to know everything you saw in the field. And then there are the other ones who are, thank you, Mr. Ambulance Driver.
Yeah.
And I think that we're still stuck in that tough place where we got to hold up and sort of let that ignorance wash off our backs and keep that presence going. Yeah. Because I'll tell you, over, you know, nearly 20 years in the field, I have noticed a change in ER docs. ER docs tend to be more, and even when I do a regular transport, they want to know what's going on en route. Even though they pretty much know, they got a handoff from a doctor, they pretty much know the status of the patient, they know what they're expecting, but they want to see what I see. And if they know you, if they know you and they know that you're giving a good presentation, they'll seek you out for more information. Yeah, I got a sign off from the doc, but I want to know what you saw.
And I'll tell you, when I first started, you know, back in the day, doctors and nurses didn't really give a crap about what we did, right? They didn't really pay attention to a lot of the stuff that we would have to say. And it took a few doctors to do, like you say, they pull you into the room, they debrief you and want to know more about what was going on. When that started to happen, I found myself doing a much more thorough assessment, going beyond the EMS part of my assessment, getting a little deeper into the weeds with things, even if it was something I couldn't necessarily control or do for the patient, I knew, and this comes with experience, right? It's not something you just know off the top of your head coming out of class, EMT class or paramedic class, but I just knew from experience that, okay, this patient has this complaint, they're presenting with this, so this part of their history or this medication or, you know, something that they ate or something that's going on is important to the overall assessment for that patient. Right. That's going to be information that I'm going to want to pull out of my chart, pull out of the patient's chart, so that when the doctor starts asking me questions, I can say, and oh yeah, they have a history of this. They're on this medicine. You know what I mean? They're not compliant with this medicine. Maybe that's why they're presenting like this, right? And I found that really does help. And I've done podcasts and emails and articles about, you know, building up that cash, you know, reserve and cash, CACHE cash, right? Where when you do that for doctors and nurses and you have that information, when the time comes when you think something's going on and everyone's blowing you off, like, you know what you're talking about, that's when they're going to say, hey, wait a minute, this is the medic or this is the EMT that's very informative and does a really great assessment and provides all the information. He's telling me he thinks this patient is, this is going on. That doc is going to pay a little bit more attention than they would for the EMT and paramedic that just throws them on the stretcher and says, okay, see you later, go into the break room.
Yep. You know? Yep. 100% with you on that.
Guys, please do me a favor. Be sure to hit that like button, hit the share button. It helps us out. Feel free to comment so we can also see your comments, let you know what you guys are thinking about while we're doing this today. Josh, another thing that I wanted to talk about, it kind of leads into some of what we talked about today. But one thing is, this is just like an operational thing, right? I read an article about EMTs and medics. They get accused of sexual assault, stuff like that, in the back of the ambulance, right? Just to kind of make this really short, and kind of a tip for people, I guess. This is sort of like a quick tip is, if you're a male transporting a female and you don't have a female to transport, I think it's always important to, like, document mileage before and after, you know, verbally, you know, say it on the air, every request, what your mileage is, even say that you're transporting a female patient, things like that. Not that it protects you 100%, but it's something that's there, right? It's more data. Should the patient say, "Oh, this guy touched me inappropriately, and now I want to claim, you know, assault, that they were inappropriate," you know, because all too often what happens is, if you get accused of that, you're immediately.
Oh yeah, now, you know, you're right. I mean, I remember stories and what, you know, look, we used to always handle if I had a female partner, and the scariest calls along that line were the female EDP or emotionally distressed person. Yes. And you have either two guys, or, you know, you're working with a if you're just working in a way that is the regular 911 scenario where things aren't clearly defined and announced. But what we used to do is absolutely, you know, show us one in one with a female,
right,
and the mileage is and the time is, and go over the radio with that so they right. have it there. And when you got to the bay, you know, give another one. Right. I've heard stories where, like, two guys are working and they're really sort of suspicious about the patient that they're bringing along. The two guys, literally through the opening of the ambulance, held hands with, you know, one guy's in the tech seat, one guy's the driver, and they reach back and forward, and they held hands while they drove to the hospital, so right. they could say they were, you know, for the whole time.
That's funny, because, you know, I never heard that, but, you know, the thing is that if you get patients that are even, I think, suggestive that they might want to have some type of confrontation like that, that's when I'll stay on scene and wait for another truck to come that has a female EMT or
forget it, you know, wait yeah. a second, just forget about the EDP or the female or working in that sort of, you know, high risk of suspicion environment. Let's just talk about, you know, teching and driving. Let's just transmute to that mode. One of my real pet peeves is when you get into the bus and you're teching and the driver has the rear view mirror tilted up. So it's like you can't see anything. I'm like, what the hell? And he says, well, I can't see behind me. And I'm like, I'm behind you.
Yeah.
It's like, you're supposed to keep one eye on me.
That's why I always kept it like that. I always had it pointed in the back, and my partner said, what do you look at the mirror like that for? Because I can see what's going on behind me. I can't see everything, but I can see you getting strangled.
You know, or you can see, you know, listen, I'm sort of standing up doing the balance thing that you're not supposed to do nowadays. I understand the rules are against it, but sometimes, you know, you did what you needed to do. Trying to start an IV, you know that. You're not going to go for every pothole that you can find.
Right, exactly.
Or you're not going to hit the brakes, or you know yeah. that I'm standing, and we'll give verbals. Or I could give you a look through my eye. I don't want to tell the patient they're crashing, but I could look at my partner, and he sees the worry in my face and steps on it, or lights it up, or gets us going.
I think it's a little bit of situational awareness, right? It's this is what
100% situational awareness.
What used to kill me was when I used to have partners, and I didn't really mind, you know, teching a lot of the calls, right? I feel that I've teched more than I drove in my,
yep,
my days, right?
Yep.
And I find that that made me a better provider because I did more. I had a lot more patient contact than my partner if he wanted to drive all the time because they didn't want to do the paperwork. They didn't want to deal with the patients. But as a driver, it's not just, oh, you're behind wheeling around and throw me around the back of the thing, in the back of the truck. I need a partner. When I had a guy driving and he didn't have a pen with him, I said, hey, go get me some demographics. I'm going to assess the patient. Go get me some demographics. And they'd be like, do you have a pen? I'm like, what are you talking about? I need a partner. I don't need a driver. You know, now,
you know, the
drive for me is one thing, but I don't need you asking me for my stethoscope or my pen and stuff like that. You're going to help me do an assessment. You're going to help me get demographics and stuff like that. You used to drive me crazy. And then, like you said, if you're driving and I'm in the back, I need you to be aware of if I'm standing up for some reason to get equipment out of some place or to do some type of patient intervention, not to start throwing me around in the back of the truck. I need you to be aware that the patient is trying to get out of the stretcher, that you realize that and you pull over. If the patient has their, hands around my throat, then you're going to go ahead and pull over and come help me, not just keep driving, listening to your music in the front of the truck. You know what I mean? It drives me friggin' nuts. I used to tell partners, they get in the front, they start driving, and they'd be blasting music all the way to the hospital.
The lights and sirens on every job.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, I don't need you. I don't need you, listen to music really. I need you to listen to what the hell I'm doing back there in case I need you for something. And your role in that call doesn't end because we have the patient in the back of the truck and now we're driving to the hospital. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of people, you know, don't really kind of grasp that. You know what I mean? Now with that, I want to round out this today's little chat here, Josh, and talking about people claiming assault and claiming sexual assault and stuff like that by us, and how the complainant is the one that's believed, right? I also see things where you have on the reverse side of that, where you have EMTs and medics getting assaulted, punched by patients, right? And nothing ever happens to the patient. It's a pass because they're drunk.
Right.
It's a pass because they were high.
Yep.
It's a pass because, you know, they were in pain or something and they punched you in the face because, you know, you didn't like the way you were starting the IV.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So that kind of annoys me because that ends up being this double, you know, standard type thing that if they complain about us, it's automatically we're thrown to the wolves. But if they assault us, then it's like, well, we'll see what we're going to do about it. You know, maybe we'll get them in trouble. Maybe we won't. Are you really hurt? You know what I mean? Stuff like that. And it's just sucks to me because I've been assaulted on calls. I know you have as well. And I never had to go to court for a patient that was going to jail or having to show up because they were being charged with assaulting me or my partner, you know?
What's the situation now with nurses in the ED? They do go away in handcuffs, don't they? If they assault nurses,
you mean?
Hasn't it really changed for them?
Yeah, I think hospitals have gotten much more strict with that, where if you assault a nurse or a doctor, they push to have the patient get arrested. Now, listen, there's sometimes where a patient doesn't know what the hell they're doing because they're they're coming out of a seizure, right. They're postictal, they're hypoxic, they're hypoglycemic, whatever. That's a different story. You know, that's when.
And usually you have enough hands around to keep the patient restrained safely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, I understand that part of it is a reality to the job where that ends up being something that has to happen. But when it comes to, you know, the other end of it where we're the ones getting assaulted and it's a clear cut thing, it's feel like nothing happened. Then you go, I know the video or something, I think it was Staten Island, where they had a patient, they brought the patient into the ER and the patient started freaking out in the room. The EMT was assaulted and was like, nothing ever happened. You know, I saw a post about, you know, we got to push the DA, Staten Island DA, to press charges. I'm like, why we got to push them to press charges?
Right.
It's clear that the person was assaulted. It's on video in the ER of them being assaulted with around a bunch of other nurses and stuff. And they oh, you know, it's not. Meanwhile, if that would have happened in a bar or in a mall or something like that, where you got assaulted, the person would be arrested. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's funny to me that it's like you put the uniform on, and now somehow your rights of you know, recourse if you're assaulted by somebody is taken away. You know.
That's 100%. That's an absolute true sentence. The uniform, that the certification changes what the response to you is for what otherwise would be a cut and dry case for anybody else. And it does seem a little bit one-sided when you come to emergency services. You know, you hit a cop, you're going, that's it. There's laws against that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are theoretically laws against hitting. Well, here's the thing. Remember the whole thing in New York City, where even though you're a uniformed EMS, you weren't part of uniform services. Sanitation was uniform services.
Yeah, I remember that whole argument.
And then when they changed the law where it was a felony to assault EMS, it only counted for city EMS, for FDNY EMS. It didn't count for privates.
Right, the voluntaries didn't get included.
Right, they didn't count. It's just like, how do you make that determination? How is that? It blows your mind.
Same system, the same patient, the same system, you know?
Yep.
That is funny.
It comes down, it's not really, but I guess it comes down to the law enforcement that come up on the scene that are dealing with it. If they want to do the paperwork. I don't know. I don't have. I'll just descend into non-flattering descriptions. But
right,
you're right. It is an absolute reality, and it's something that, you know, when you're in the field, when you're running jobs, you've got to be aware of.
Yeah. All right, Josh. Let's end it there, man. I think, like I said, I wanted to keep it very conversational today, not tackle anything too crazy, but I wanted to bring some stuff up that I think is important for people to sort of keep in the front of their mind, you know, keep remembering this stuff, because while a lot of it is basic things, a lot of people start getting away from, we do get complacent, we do start treating things like drunks and nursing home calls as run of the mill, nothing really going on here type thing. And then that's when we end up in articles on GEMS and EMS-1 and the news because we didn't do something that we were supposed to do. You know,
keep your eye on your partner.
Yeah, I like to call it, you know, giving people a ground ball. You know, there's enough stuff that we could jam ourselves up with in this job without going and, you know, giving people a ground ball and just kind of, you know, letting them do it, you know, do whatever they want, and where we end up screwing ourselves in the process.
You know, really, the big takeaway from this, Jim, is, you know, and you think about it, when if there's problems on the ambulance, they rarely pull just one of you off and say it's your problem, not your partner's. Because what I've always been told, what I grew up learning, is that you're responsible for what your partner does. Your partner hands in bad paperwork, you're both getting written up for it. Your partner does something, you're both getting, you know, some sort of disciplinary action because you're responsible for your partner. Exactly. So when you get into the driver's seat, have the mirror facing back, have a line of communication to your partner, know what's going on, know how you're both feeling today, and know how you can work well as a team. And that's the big thing.
Yeah. All right, guys, thanks for joining us today. I hope you guys get some enjoyment out of these live broadcasts. again, we're trying to get, I'm trying to get them onto different platforms for get more people watching, more interaction. So when you watch this stuff, guys, please comment in the comments, whether you're on YouTube or Facebook, whatever. Throw some likes up there for us. Put some hearts in there for us. Even the little smiley face hugging the heart, whatever it is. Tell if you're an EMT, you're a medic, whatever, so we know that you're with us, that you're listening, and even put stuff up there, man, that you think is important to talk about. Because we don't get it to get in on, if you see them make a comment and we don't get to talk about it during the live show, we can always bring it up on the next episode. We can try to do them once a week, so we can always bring them up on another episode. So, all right, Josh, we're out of there, man.
All right, awesome, Jim.
Good. All right, buddy, as always, I'm Jim Hoffman.
Josh Knapp.
Stay safe.